Hi, this is Paul Langer of PainScience.com. It's Thursday, October 12th. Maybe it's Thursday, October 12th. This is a big post I have for you today. This probably is the longest post I've ever published. Much bigger than many of my supposedly featured articles on PainScience.com. The theory is blog posts are generally briefer and more ephemeral, and then I've got a library of permanent featured articles. But this blog post is giant. It's gigantic. It's 6,000 words, which is 2 and even 3 times longer than a lot of my permanent featured articles. This one is destined to become a featured article, though. That's actually the point. This is the beginning of me having a page dedicated to the topic of cognitive functional therapy on painscience.com. But meanwhile, we've got a big blog post about this year's exciting study of that topic, study of CFT. The post is titled, Reconsidering Restore: Second Thoughts About a Study of Back Pain's Hottest New Treatment. At least that's the title at the moment that I'm reading this. We'll see. I've changed it about 8 times already. I like Reconsidering Restore. I'll probably stick with that, but that subtitle. Okay, so let's get started. Wouldn't it be amazing to finally start winning the war against back pain? That bane of our species, our most inevitable misfortune after death and taxes. Imagine that. Imagine a world without back pain. I'm not even sure I can. Well, maybe not without back pain, but with back pain that's well controlled and isn't a plague on our economy the way it is now. There's a new therapy, quote-unquote new, for back pain that's making waves and earning praise from the right kinds of people for a health science nerd like me. We're not talking about a hologram bracelet or another spinal traction gadget, a massage gun, or frickin' lasers. We're talking here about serious healthcare, a sensible and reproducible methodology, the bleeding edge of complex care for a complex problem, based on the greatest hits of the science of pain, and now based on evidence, too, maybe? Back in May, I reported on a major good news study for back pain, which, quote, validates my career, basically because it was a loud and credible endorsement of an approach to pain care that I have been speculatively promoting for many years. I was a bit giddy from a megadose of sweet, sweet confirmation bias. Plus, it's just really nice to report some good news once in a while. I get to do so little of that. My buzz didn't last long. I don't think they ever do. It's the nature of buzzes. I know too well that we are blind to flaws that we don't want to see. Before the ink was dry, I was already seeking more critical reactions to the paper, my own and from others, and finding them a little too easily for comfort. So what is this all about? This big post is about the RESTORE trial of cognitive functional therapy for back pain. It's a milestone in the field. It's a really good quality paper about a good trial in a good journal about an important treatment method that brings together a whole bunch of pieces all the smarty pants clinicians have been talking about for years, maybe 20, 30 years even. Curiously, I have no idea what RESTORE actually means, or what it stands for. It's used only a few times in the paper and never actually defined. It just sounds nice, I guess. There is a polished website from the CFT folks, restorebackpain.com. That website explains the RESTORE trial in glowing terms, perhaps, not surprisingly, given the source. This is my more sober take, with my enthusiasm curbed. RESTORE has fallen, in my esteem, from solid good news to merely mildly promising, I guess. It is a good study, I want to be clear about that, but it is only one study, and it has real flaws, as all good studies do. Even good studies. All studies have flaws, even the good ones. And I don't think it was the study we actually needed. That's the real problem. Much as I want to believe, the benefits were not all that impressive when I looked more closely. There's an editorial in the same issue of The Lancet about Restore, which is an excellent source in its own right, and it probably deserves to be read as much as the study itself. It's a short, formal, academic version of this post. And why read this post? Why read or listen to a huge informal review of this scientific paper? What I said above, that's the long story short version for all. Restore only seems mildly promising after all. And that's all most people need or want to know. But for analysis-hungry PainSci members, well, members get the details. This post is about 6,000 words, which is pushing the 7,000 words of the paper itself, and much longer than the readable portion of the study. Of course, most of the paper is statistical analysis and things like that. There's probably only 1,000 or 2,000 words of readable interpretation and discussion in the paper. So this post is effectively much longer than the paper. So why read that? Why read this? Especially when there's such a nicely presented summary by the authors themselves on restorebackpain.com. Two reasons that I can think of. This is clearer. It's more fully translated science, more thoroughly explained. And this is more curmudgeonly. I take the limitations and caveats much more seriously. And it's a perspective on a major back pain subtopic that you're not going to find anywhere else, I don't think. Certainly not in this detail. It's worth understanding well, because Restore is an important trial of an important thing. So about that. Why did I initially think that Restore validates my career? CFT is a close match to the kind of care that I would offer myself if I were still offering care, if I was still a clinician, or if I returned to that job. It's what most of my respected clinician pals are actually doing. They're either literally doing CFT or a therapy that looks an awful lot like it, more commonly. From about 2008 to 2018, I was inventing something a lot like CFT, as were many others. I think that anyone chasing the science in this field and backing steadily away from the obsession with biomechanics and scannable pathology, anyone backing away from the old dogma, has ended up in a CFT-like place. We can hardly help it. There was nowhere else obvious to go. It is the relatively obvious alternative, which has become clear over time. And that's why this matters, because Restore is a test of what an awful lot of progressive healthcare professionals have been up to in the last decade. And indeed, some of those people are exasperated by Restore. They're exasperated by CFT. They're wondering why someone is trying to brand and package what they consider to just be good science-based care. So, a positive trial of CFT sounds like an endorsement of my thinking for over a decade. So, of course, my first reaction to it was a nice, warm glow. Who wouldn't want to find that in the hallowed pages of The Lancet? But humble pie is always served after the proud appetizer and the excited entree. The Restore trial from 10,000 feet, my high-level overview. So this is the first trial of cognitive functional therapy with some oomph. And CFT is what? Quote, an individualized approach that targets unhelpful, pain-related cognitions, emotions, and behaviors that contribute to pain and disability, end quote. More about CFT itself soon, but for now, I'm just going to say that word unhelpful is really doing a lot of work. There have been other promising trials of CFT that I have eagerly cited in the past, most notably Vibe Fursum et al. In 2013 and O'Keefe et al. In 2020, but not enough trials and not robust enough trials to be considered strong evidence. I wouldn't even say that it was a growing body of evidence yet. Restore might get us to that mark, but not necessarily. It's still not much of a body. And it's also worth noting that not every trial has harmonized with this one. The first two I just mentioned, they were positive. They had happy-sounding conclusions. But there are contrarian notes, most notably an important 2014 systematic review with a meh conclusion. That was by Camper et al. They studied the results of a variety of trials of back pain treatment done in a way that was consistent with the biopsychosocial model of healthcare, which is a humanistic and holistic vision of care that integrates more psychological and social considerations with the more biocentric medical model. And they concluded that multidisciplinary biopsychosocial rehabilitation was modestly effective. A bit less pain, a smidgen less disability, but that it also required a lot of time and resources and was not clearly an overall win compared to more accessible treatments. It's a damned with faint praise conclusion if I ever heard one. So that is the sound of scientists saying, meh. So that was Camper 2014, the one clear, not so great research note about CFT-like care. Obviously not the same thing. CFT, more specific, but very, very similar in spirit to what Camper studied. So despite the existence of some past research, Restore changes the game. This trial is much more substantive than its predecessors. It's big, it's complicated, it was orchestrated by an experienced team, and the cherry on top, it was published in a top-tier journal. These things are a great foundation, but you know, obviously they don't guarantee an A-plus grade. Not everything that glitters in a fancy journal is gold, and should you need a reminder, here is a reminder. The Lancet has some major bloopers in its long storied history, like the odious Wakefield paper linking autism to vaccines, like the abominable PACE trial, or even more recently, a trial of Trump's COVID drug, hydroxychloroquine. Obviously, I am not saying that Restore is anything like those. I'm just pointing out that the Lancet is clearly far from infallible. The Restore trial beams with good news, and it occurs to me that I swallowed hook, line, and sinker the good news slant in the paper and the media before I actually knew for myself that it was good news, because of that powerful combination of being told that it was good news and wanting to believe it. When someone tells you something that you want to believe, most brains just go straight to accepting it, and I think I did. And now I'm walking it back a little. So the authors, they declared victory in the paper and in the media without any major qualifications and caveats, just a single short paragraph acknowledging some technical limitations, 160 words of discussion of limitations in a 7,700-word paper. I am going to give the limitations somewhat more attention now. Just a quick side note about bias and conflict of interest. This is kind of an important frame for everything that comes after this. Restore was conducted by people who are seriously committed to cognitive functional therapy. Their bias is a given here, as it often is in science, because ain't nobody got time for that without some skin in the game, some passion. As always, bias is noteworthy, but it's not necessarily a deal breaker. For what it's worth, I think that these folks, the CFT folks, truly, madly, deeply care about CFT and helping people with back pain. Their passion is, of course, not worth much on its own in scientific terms, but it's polite to acknowledge it. It's the real thing. But they are also undeniably in a position to profit from a positive CFT trial, both financially and reputationally. And both matter. Both of those things really do motivate people. And that kind of bias is another kettle of fish. And now we're getting into actual conflict of interest territory. It's still not necessarily a deal breaker, but it is important to acknowledge it. That is the context in which this research was done, by people who really care about it, possibly a little too much, possibly a little too invested. And that's just, this is just normal. This is how science works. Again, it's mostly done by people who care, because people who don't care don't do really difficult, expensive things. Because they don't care. So this is just how it goes. It's you gotta take your science from the people who are willing to do it. And again and again and again, that is people who are deeply involved in and invested, often literally and figuratively, in what they are studying. So it's okay, but it's important to acknowledge. Let's talk about cognitive functional therapy itself. CFT is, I like to define it this way, it is the BPSification of back pain care. The purpose of the RESTORE trial was to test the effectiveness of cognitive functional therapy. This post is about the trial, but ultimately I am definitely going to have a permanent featured article about CFT itself on painscience.com. So here is a start on that. I mean, this is really kind of what all of this is about for me. I'm, you know, going to end up with a big article about CFT, and the most important part of that article will be not just a citation, but very detailed analysis of this critical reference, this one study that's so important to it. So let's get a start then on CFT. CFT tries to make something practical out of a 50-year-old abstract idea. Tough healthcare challenges like chronic pain require complex, personalized care. Imagine, mind blown, rather than just one or two key points of passive intervention like a pill or a spinal adjustment or a brace. I am talking, of course, about the famous biopsychosocial BPS model of healthcare, which has been fashionable, which is a very carefully chosen word, for the last 20 years or so in musculoskeletal and pain medicine. BPS-style care boils down to treating people like people with lives that matter, relevant to care, also known as nice healthcare, which may be especially important in the treatment of pain because pain is so clearly not just about the bio, but also about our psychological and social circumstances, our story. And we sure do hope that BPSified care is more effective than passive therapies. But it's extremely hard to standardize BPSified care, extremely hard to standardize and study it. And frankly, I'm not sure that it has been yet by RESTORE. I'm also not sure that it ever will be. But it has not exactly gone well, this whole BPSification of care thing. And Cormack et al. Argued persuasively in 2022 that the BPS model is lost in translation, and chasing it has resulted in, quote, suboptimal musculoskeletal care. That's kind of a depressing big picture. Now, he might argue that that CFT is a good example. And CFT certainly is an attempt to make it work, to standardize BPS care. And then the RESTORE trial is an attempt to study it. So CFT is BPSified care. And now I'm quoting the authors of the RESTORE trial, Kent et al., puts into practice the contemporary recommendations for a biopsychosocial approach to care. Presumably, they tried to do it right, as opposed to trying to do it wrong. One more key bit, though, it's not just BPSified care. It also includes some important special sauce for encouraging movement, which is not something that specifically emerges from the BPSification. It's a more specific idea. And that element of CFT addresses pain provocative movement patterns that contribute to low back pain, such as protective muscle guarding and movement avoidance. Okay. So that description of CFT, kind of theoretical, maybe a little too abstract. Let's get a little more practical. What actually happens in CFT? Coaching, not fixing. That's basically what it boils down to. There are three major components of CFT: education, confidence in movement, and lifestyle medicine. Let's look at each of those in a little more detail, just a tiny bit of more detail for each one. Making sense of pain with personalized education, especially challenging common beliefs about pain that lead to fearful movement, limitation, and overprotection. Peter O'Sullivan directly attributes pain to overprotection. His quote here, Peter is one of the CFT and Restore crew. We have all these rules around sit up straight, brace your core, lift with a straight back, which actually teaches people to overprotect their back, stop moving it normally, and start overprotecting it, and that creates pain and distress. Okay, so that's Peter, and we'll be looking a little more closely in the next section at just exactly what does he mean there. Next point, confidence, building confidence, exposure with control, graded exposure, challenging fearful expectations with guided physical behavioral experiments. That's their phrase, guided physical behavioral experiments. In other words, translate it, try moving like so, and it'll probably work out better than you think. That's what guided physical behavioral experiments means. Try it, see how it goes, probably going to be okay. And the final component, final of three, lifestyle change, specifically reducing systemic vulnerabilities. And this is valuable for literally any pain patient and is a very good example of the kind of thing that I've been yammering on about for ages, which is why I kind of like CFT, because, yep, this is important. And a great thing about all of this and about BPSification of care in general is that you're not wasting your time, even if it doesn't work for back pain. This is all stuff that's worth doing for its own sake, even if it doesn't help back pain, which is certainly an important point and definitely an important difference from lots of other methods of treating back pain. So CFT is more focused on teaching and coaching than the traditional fixing style of physical therapy, where therapies are done to the patient. Is CFT a treatment for psychosomatic back pain? Yes, but shush, don't say psycho. People get upset. Or maybe do say it, because maybe people should get upset about this. Certainly nothing curbs my enthusiasm about CFT more than this one critical detail. A major premise of CFT is that, quote, thoughts and feelings actually cause back pain, straight from the horse's mouth. Here is a quote I've already read above. I think it was in a footnote above. Now we're featuring it. CFT is an individualized approach that targets unhelpful pain-related cognitions, emotions, and behaviors that contribute to pain and disability. That pretty much says it all, but the quote goes on. There is more. A key distinguishing feature of CFT compared with other psychologically informed approaches, such as cognitive behavioral therapy, is that CFT addresses pain-provocative movement patterns that contribute to low back pain, such as protective muscle guarding and movement avoidance. Wearable movement sensors enable clinicians to easily measure such movements and explore the relationship to pain, both in the clinical setting and during patients' normal activities at work and recreation. These thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that CFT targets are specifically fearful. It's really all about the fear. This is not just saying unhelpful thoughts, emotions, and behaviors are the problem. It's an even more aggressively psychological foundation of thoughts, emotions, and fears. You don't have to boil this down any further. It's spelled out right there. CFT is based on a psychosomatic hypothesis. Anxiety is a major driver of back pain. Sound familiar? Where have we heard this before? I'll just give it a slight rewording, and the inspiration for CFT sounds an awful lot like the ideas of Dr. John Backpain, a psychological Sarno. Although Sarno has always been extremely popular, many patients find his all-in-your-head focus to be offensive, and many back pain experts dismiss Sarno as a crank. It's not a flattering comparison, so how is CFT different? Because there are differences, of course. CFT certainly isn't a clone of what Sarno was selling, but there is some serious overlap. The claim that anxiety is a major driver of back pain is not necessarily wrong, but we should be clear about what it is. The founders of CFT definitely believe that the keys to back pain are between your ears. Just like Sarno, who so obviously got rich by drinking his own Kool-Aid for an audience of millions, CFT is definitely based on a Sarno-esque assumption that back pain is seriously psychological. Kent et al. Seem to be careful not to say it too loudly and directly, but that's what's going on here. I'm not saying that CFT is bad because it's secretly blaming fear. I have very mixed feelings and views on this. It's complicated is a massive understatement. But CFT is unmistakably psychological in character. It sounds a lot more serious to say targeting unhelpful pain-related cognitions, emotions, and behaviors than you're in serious chronic pain because you put the fear whammy on yourself and you're too spooked to move. But they are basically the same. CFT versus crappy physical therapy business as usual. Some important perspective here. Even if CFT is much less impressive than anyone wants it to be, there's a strong case to be made that it is not just the lesser of two evils, but by a long shot. It may be way less wrong than the incumbent therapeutic paradigm for back pain, because the insane, baffling majority of therapy for back pain is still made of nonsense like your glutes aren't activating and your fragile, unstable spine is out of line. Painfully simplistic biomechanical stuff, widely criticized by experts for decades now, and yet still extremely prevalent in the marketplace. Like, almost completely dominant. 95% of therapy for back pain is like that. Many professionals, not you, dear reader, but many, really do need some guidelines and clarity about how to move beyond that stupid old back pain crap. We cannot just scold people for clinging to old paradigms. Sooner or later, we need an alternative, and CFT delivers a well-defined and reasonable alternative. It is something to pick up rather than baggage to put down. Structuralism and the medical model are still freakishly dominant, and CFT will have many advocates just because it is a rational, compassionate alternative that produces care that is, if nothing else, not just stoking simplistic fears about spinal fragility. Care that is compassionate, curious, and supports the pursuit of safe and enjoyable activities with rational reassurance. A debunking of harmful myths about pain seems inherently valuable and superior to the old paradigm, even if it isn't actually curative. Care with those qualities should not be unusual, but weirdly it is. And so many people would defend and promote CFT, even without a good study to back them up. And they will do so not because it's evidence-based medicine, but because it is clearly less bad than the old paradigm. And I think that's fine. But if they're also armed with seemingly good news citations about CFT's efficacy, like the Restore trial, which isn't actually a trial of efficacy, but shush, don't look too closely at that. Yeah, CFT is probably going to be a big deal with the combo of being clearly better than the old alternative and being apparently evidence-based now. But how evidence-based is it really? Let's start looking at the trial more closely. Now, testing CFT, the design of the trial, what did they actually do? What was Restore? The Restore subjects, the Restorees, were 500 people with very chronic back pain, 4 years of it on average. Everyone tried to get help for their back pain, and many had given up, probably in disgust. The study included some patients that usually don't get included in back pain studies, older people, surgical patients, folks with other major health issues. So this was quite a diverse group of people with nasty chronic back pain. Kent et al. Used their science sorting hat to put them on three teams: Team CFT, Team CFT with biofeedback, and Team Good Luck With That. The vanilla CFT group was 7 CFT treatment sessions over 12 weeks, plus a CFT booster at 26 weeks. Team CFT with biofeedback was CFT with movement tracking, because it seemed to be helpful in other trials. The CFT-only group also wore sensors, but was not used to enhance their therapy. It was just extra data. There were 2 sensors on the spine in the biofeedback group, above and below the low back, to show low back positions and movement. And Team Good Luck With That, this was the usual care group. They just fended for themselves. They got whatever help they could get on their own, out in the community. Like they weren't even part of a study. And they knew that, and that matters. More on this soon. And then the researchers waited until a full year had passed and checked up on as many of the restorees as they could. Where's the pain? Pain was measured, but weirdly, it was not the focus. What happened to the pain seems like the main thing that anyone wants to hear from any study of a back pain treatment, but in the wacky world of pain research, pain itself often takes a back seat. It was only a secondary outcome here, along with changes in beliefs about pain, movement fear, and satisfaction. I am not a fan of these outcomes and these priorities. So what was the focus, if not pain? The spotlight, the primary outcomes, was on disability and bang for therapeutic buck. Disability was measured by activity limitation as reported by participants on a questionnaire. And bang for therapeutic buck was measured in QALYs. That's an acronym for Quality Adjusted Life Years. QALYs are a rather cryptic yardstick and somewhat controversial, too. I'm not saying it's bad, just it's not a straightforward bit of statistics. It's the casual observer is not going to be able to easily critique QALYs. Let's put it that way. Okay, so those are the primary and secondary outcomes. What happened to the primary outcomes? What happened with function and care efficiency? And the secondary outcomes, what happened with pain and changes in beliefs? Well, of course, the whole point of this is that it was widely advertised as good news, so you already know that the results were allegedly good news. So rather than getting into the details of the results, let's get a bit crazy and talk about the study's limitations before digging into its results. A break with scientific reporting tradition. Okay, it's time for the meat of the post, the section where it really starts to come together, the point of having a kind of a cranky analysis of the RESTORE trial. The bloopers and the blemishes in the design. I don't really think that there are any true bloopers in the RESTORE trial. That's just some fun heading hyperbole, but there are quite a few blemishes. And just a reminder before I dive in here, I am deliberately nitpicking a study I want to like. The paper itself barely acknowledges any limitations, which almost qualifies as a limitation in itself. I don't like seeing a token effort in this department. It's not a good place for it. To your researchers, skim somewhere else. Seeing an awareness of what your study can't do does wonders for my ability to trust your judgment about what it can do. Probably the researchers aren't going to listen to me. My potential concerns about the paper are roughly in order of escalating importance here. It's a short section if you exclude the footnotes. It's not short if you include them, and I'm going to include them. All the footnotes here are basically just elaborations on a key point. So I have identified, 7 significant limitations. 6 or 7. I think the last one is a bit debatable. Most important of all, and yet not discussed in the paper, let alone highlighted, this was not a trial of efficacy. It was not a placebo-controlled trial, which means that it cannot actually show that CFT, quote-unquote, works. This needs a fair bit of elaboration. This is a tricky but a very important point. The word efficacy is different in the research context than effectiveness. Efficacy is how well a treatment works in ideal circumstances, such as a carefully contrived scientific test. Unfortunately, real life is rarely ideal, you might have noticed. Effectiveness is how well the same thing works in typical clinical settings and patients' lives, which is what actually matters to most patients. It's not that one is right and one is wrong. They're just different. Different kinds of trials can tell us different kinds of things, and we don't call it efficacy unless we have a very clear idea that confounding factors have been eliminated. A trial like RESTORE cannot show efficacy. The goal of controlling trials is to show that an apparent benefit is due to an active ingredient and not some other confounding factor. And there are very many tricksy confounding factors that are forever getting underestimated, especially in the life sciences. So this trial was controlled. It's right in the title. But it's maybe a little on the misleading side, because it was not controlled by a comparison with a sham, a placebo. It wasn't a strong control. Without a placebo control, you cannot show efficacy clearly. Instead, you get something analogous to circumstantial evidence in law, that is, evidence that relies on an inference to connect it to a conclusion of fact. Indirect evidence is not necessarily wrong, but it can also be misleading. That inference step can be a doozy, especially in medical research. So again, the most important limitation here is that this was not a trial of efficacy. It was not a strongly controlled trial. It was not a placebo-controlled trial. There is one planned, by the way, which is interesting, but this one was not. And so no matter how good it was in its own way, RESTORE is not a test of whether or not CFT works. It's a test of whether a very complicated cocktail produced results with no clear concept of what in that cocktail is the active ingredient, or whether the effect was, for instance, an artifact. So that's the number one concern. Next item, much smaller. I've already discussed it. It's smaller because there's a whole section about this above. Disability as a primary outcome is defensible, but I am never going to be entirely okay with it myself. Finding ways to function better in spite of pain is important, obviously, and sometimes it's the only realistic goal for people, but it should never be confused with actually treating pain. So that's my second greatest concern about RESTORE, is that it looks like to people like, oh, look, this works for back pain, except it doesn't relieve pain to a significant degree. More on that later. It does other stuff, but the positive results are not focused on what I think actually matters most. Next up, the study was unblinded or unmasked, which supercharges the risk of performance bias, which is more charmingly known as the Frostrebo effect. The danger is that the results aren't showing that CFT recipients got better, but rather that people deprived of that opportunity got worse because they were frustrated not to be getting the good stuff. People with serious, stubborn medical problems, and that certainly is what these study subjects were, they had pretty bad, pretty long-term chronic pain. People like that seek out clinical trials, hopeful that they will finally get some relief. So how do you feel when you join a trial and you get stuck in the no-hope group? You don't feel great. That does not feel great. And that disappointment turns up in the numbers. Performance bias isn't some cute technicality that researchers can just wave away. It's a potent force, a classic confounder that has been well studied. So again, much like the placebo control, we can get good information out of an unblinded study. It's not necessarily the end of the world for a study to be unblinded, but it does undermine the trustworthiness of the results. It introduces the possibility of quite a strong confounder. Next up is the significant risk of bias, also discussed above, so also a relatively short item here. The authors certainly have a dog in this fight. They've got a point of view on how therapy should be done that they are vigorously promoting. Their reputations, their pride, their future earnings, perhaps, are probably substantially affected by this. None of that means that they aren't sincere and compassionate. In fact, I strongly suspect that they are. But we all have trouble thinking outside the boxes that we put ourselves in, and CFT is now a very well-defined and fancy box, which tends to happen when you name something. CFT has been, quite literally packaged. It is a quite polished combination of ingredients. With a proper noun stuck on it, with a label stuck on it. So, yeah, that's a box. I'm not saying they're wrong to be passionate about CFT, but we need to know where they're coming from and trust but verify. This next one is interesting. The sensors. The sensors could be a confounding factor, maybe a significant placebo generator. Because, and I know this sounds strange, but imagine people probably feel better cared for when an intriguing medical gadget is strapped to them. The people with sensors didn't do better than the sensorless restories, as it happens. The results were about the same with or without, but that doesn't mean it isn't still a confounder. This is a great example of why science is hard. In a study like this, you could have multiple confounders in multiple groups, some of them canceling out others and generally making it virtually impossible to know what's really going on. It's a bit ironic that this design concern is found in a paper about a therapy method that clearly takes the role of the mind so seriously. It's also probably the best example, of why a complex pragmatic slash effectiveness trial can't prove that CFT is efficacious without better control of confounding factors like this. Second to last, the penultimate limitation concern, those qualies, the quality adjusted life years qualies. It's a fishy instrument. Quote from a 2003 paper by Prieto et al. It has been criticized on technical and ethical grounds. And so it might not be the best choice for a primary outcome. Fuzzy benefits like a good qualies score have often been used in junkier science to obscure the lack of more concrete benefits. If you can't show that a treatment is efficacious, well, you can still declare mission accomplished with qualies, a weird tangentially related outcome measure that only statisticians can really understand or debate. It's also qualies, much more subject to p hacking, like anything that requires a bigger spreadsheet. More numbers, more p hacking. Cryptic measurements like this are obviously not always abused, and I'm not saying it was abused here. It's just a bright red flag, especially in the absence of other kinds of outcomes. It's really problematic to lean on this one so heavily, which is why I never like to see it as a primary outcome, especially if pain relief isn't also another primary outcome. You can only get away with a couple of primaries. Yep, I don't like this quality stuff being so front and center. Not saying that it isn't right, it's just a reason to look more closely. Kent et al., last one, and my least certain one. Even as I get ready to read this, I've got mixed feelings about whether or not it should even be on the list. But maybe. So here's what it is. Kent et al. Picked people they thought would do well with CFT, and they excluded plenty of very real kinds of back pain patients that they did not think would do well. This is a tricky one, and it doesn't really worry me as much as other flaws, but it needs a mention. So they eliminated a lot of people, about 6,500 people from their initial candidates. They did include some tougher cases that we usually see They did include some tougher cases, more tougher cases than we usually see in back pain studies. But they still shut out a lot of people with serious back pain. And we need to wonder, how would those people have done with CFT? Was this really a study of CFT for back pain, or was it a study of CFT for people with the kind of back pain that's easier to treat with CFT? This is an issue to some degree with all clinical trials. You can't study everyone, so you've got to make choices. You got to leave someone out. So who do you leave out? It's not wrong to select appropriate candidates for an intervention. These are patients you hope have a better chance of responding. And in this case, it probably realistically reflects how clinicians would actually decide who to do CFT with. But it is important context. Back pain includes many kinds of patients who clearly are not nearly as likely to respond to CFT. And there we go. That's quite a few issues, but I left out my biggest concern with the magnitude of effects and how that was presented. That limitation needs its own second section, and that's next. The mediocre results. So yeah, I said that. Mediocre. You already know the results were strongly promoted as good news. That's why we're gathered here today. But what good news exactly? How good is it? A 2-point improvement in pain on a 10-point scale, from 6-ish to 4-ish. An 8-point improvement in disability on a 24 scale, from 14-ish to 7-ish. Those improvements were sustained for a year. The value, bang for buck, of care was high. Biofeedback as a part of therapy had no effect. And nothing seemed to go badly, which is not nothing. I wouldn't have particularly expected this kind of therapy to go badly, but a lot of back pain treatments have side effects. So if we were talking about surgery, probably some cases would have gone badly. So it's nice that nothing went badly. The durability of the improvements there is probably the major thing powering the good news vibe. The magnitude of those improvements, not so much. Honestly, if this study hadn't been loudly presented as good news, as a win for CFT, I don't think I would have been inspired by the data to call it good news at all. And that's bad. Here's a quote from Dr. Asaf Weissman, short one. A 2-point reduction in NPRS and 15 points in Roland Morris is what you'll get in almost any intervention under clinical trial. And I'll repeat, because it's really important. Despite loudly and proudly touting these results, this was not an efficacy trial. I know it's kind of an arcane distinction, but it's really important. Pragmatic trials produce smoke evidence, not proof of fire. You can only nail down efficacy with well-controlled trials, and this was not that. So, to me, the huge declaration of good news reads a bit like the obnoxious over-celebration of a bronze medal. And in the post, I include the third place meme, which is a little too complicated to describe here. Although maybe I should, actually, for the sake of, I know I have listeners who are visually impaired. Hi. Yeah, sure. Okay, so I'll describe it. I gotta get it first. Hang on a second. It's not right in front of me. I'm looking at the just the reference to the file as opposed to the actual picture itself. There we go. Yeah, okay, so the third place meme is, it's that meme that's a cartoon, 6 frames, where a guy is getting a medal, and in the second frame he's biting it to test it for gold, and in the second frame he's kissing the woman who hung the medal on his neck, and in the third he's fingering the crowd, and in the fifth, I lost count. In the penultimate pain, he is popping a champagne bottle, and then in the final one, you see that he is, as he's spraying champagne down his throat, he's standing on the third place podium as the first and second, in much more dignified fashion, look at him, wondering, what the hell, buddy. So I put some labels on this, and this is like, I feel bad because this is kind of an aggressive way to make my point. Sorry, Restore Trial authors, but I hope you have a good sense of humor because this is just fun. My labels are in the first frame, CFT wins, and second, good news, and then so cost effective, and then so satisfying, and pain slightly reduced as the champagne cork pops. And the first place podium is labeled best practices, and the second place podium is labeled almost anything. The meme is not a perfect fit because I actually think that the whole point is that everything is about the same. There is no clear winner. That's kind of the point, as opposed to there being a clear first and second place. It's not a perfect fit, but point made. It's in this CFT is in the same league as decades of mediocre contenders, and there is no obvious or settled winner. That's the point. So yeah, all right. That was hard to describe. Lots of describing. So I've got bad news about the good news. Practically anything you do for or with almost any kind of pain patient will tend to produce benefits in this league, often with error bars that are larger than the improvement as they are here. It's true that these results are a bit more robust than the usual, but nothing that couldn't easily evaporate in a do-over, right? It doesn't take a lot to push results from, pretty good to from okay to slightly better, and then you can make louder claims about how good it was. It's not like it would be some kind of aberration for a do-over to fail to get the same results that can't be reproduced is so common and serious that it has a name, the replication crisis. A lot of influential good news papers have reported big effects that suddenly get all scarce when someone else looks for them. If it can happen to genuinely impressive results, as it has many times in scientific history, imagine how easy it is for more modest ones to go poof. Another thing I notice here is that the size of the effect in this case it's ambiguous how to interpret it. It's in the sweet spot for arguing about. It's just big enough to look great to proponents and optimists, and it's just small enough to be an easy target for critics and cynics. It's very easy to say, damned with faint praise. These extremes are easily seen in the contrast between Restore's giddy enthusiasm and a much more sober take on essentially the same kind of data in a 2014 review. Camper et al., their review makes for quite an interesting contrast because they really had quite similar results, but Restore has a dramatically more positive interpretation. While Restore is a very good bit of science work in many, many ways, I have more trust in the objectivity of Camper et al. About BPSified back pain care in general than I do from Kent et al. About CFT in particular. In other words, Kent et al. Strongly presented their findings as good news, but I strongly doubt that a redo of Camper et al.'s review would change their conclusion. So, it was a little disturbing to see Restore's remarkably uncritical reception from all the therapy boffins on social media, the same folks who would be screaming foul if this was a trial showing that these kinds of mediocre results for dirty, rotten, passive modalities like dry needling or more obvious quackery. Too many people happily found good news about CFT in this study and then stopped thinking about it. Why risk spoiling a good thing? The authors themselves seem to be the most keen of them all. In a mainstream article about it, lead author Peter Kent says these large sustained effects are unusual. Well, how unusual they are is open to interpretation. They don't seem unusual to me, frankly. In fact, I feel like I've been looking at effect sizes like this for my whole career. I have been calling them underwhelming for my whole career. I've done it a gajillion times. They're There's no simpler way of hyping the results of a scientific study than rounding them up from okay to good. It's a small leap, just a little fudging, but it has a disproportionate effect on the potency of the good news. The actual effect size here is not spelled out in the abstract, and no self-respecting abstract would ever leave out an impressive effect size. So I hereby invoke the Salamander's first law of abstract interpretation. If the effect size isn't in the abstract, it's underwhelming. I will give the last word on the effect size to Bronnie Thompson, just to emphasize that I am not the only one leaning towards meh here. She says, let's temper the enthusiasm with some realism, okay? Although these are statistically significant and better than usual care, whatever that means, people with low back pain continue to have an ongoing pain at 4 out of 10 on this stupid numeric rating scale. So, yeah, I'm going to add one more thing here, which was quite troubling to me, and I haven't included it in the post, and I don't think I will. So there's a little audio bonus here. I talked to more than one person who told me that they felt very uncomfortable criticizing this study publicly because they were afraid of undermining important collegial relationships. Two people for sure told me that. And specifically, their initial reaction was, the news doesn't seem that good to me. But then adding, I wanted to tell you, Paul, in a private message, but I wouldn't say it publicly. But Bronnie did, and Asaf did, and probably some others around the web that I missed. But not many. Most people were just like, wow, yeah, that's amazing good news. And, you know, yeah, it is good news, but is it amazing good news? Okay. What's left here? Oh, just one more biggish section. Okay. It's been a long read. Unlike any other posts I've done an audio version for, I've been doing this one in parts because it's so big, and so far I've got 8 parts. Let's hit the pause button now, and the next and last stretch will be part 9. Packaging best practices. Some people really don't want to see the good work that they're already doing, quote unquote, packaged and sold for profit as a treatment system. Fair or not, CFT is going to face fierce resistance from some clinicians who feel that they were already doing something a lot like CFT, and they're very wary of its commercialization. For instance, despite the differences from CBT, CFT is still very CBT-ish. Its critical components have been part of the cognitive behavioral management of pain for literally decades. The same approaches that haven't exactly solved humanity's big back pain problem. Do we need a new brand of that, even if it's actually good? I have a few quotes here, short ones, just little snippets. Phil Greenfield says, something promising about to be ruined by the potential for reputational gains and training sales opportunities. Anonymous says, of course, the entire shebang is being monetized as is, BS and all. And Asaf Weissman, again, unpopular opinion, cognitive functional therapy is usual care. Some of this resistance is relatively generic concern about the corrupting power of the almighty dollar, but I'm also talking about more specific and vehement objections to CFT specifically, like this one from Dr. Jim Eubanks via private message and quoted with permission. It's a short paragraph here. In light of this failure to acknowledge that CFT is very similar to existing good quality care, it's hard not to see it ultimately as an attempt to consolidate market share for the selling of courses. I love the ingredients of CFT, which include sound principles of good care, but I'm concerned by the salesmanship that too often accompanies MSK therapies and interventions. I don't think those champions of a thing in the clinic who stand to make money from its success should ever hold the keys to the definitive stance on its evidentiary success. Always very articulate, Dr. Eubanks. Or another quote from Bronnie Thompson, "Don't oversell and hype what isn't terribly technical but is hard to do." If we all learn from the Restore trial, if all we learn from the Restore trial is that when therapists get confident to listen well and guide recovery and movement, people begin their own journey to well-being, then I'm perfectly happy. Let's just not trademark this practice. It should be fundamental to practice. To be clear, it is not clear that CFT is actually being branded, trademarked, marketed, etc. There is a spectrum of commercialization of therapeutic methods, and some modalities never go far down that road despite having a distinct identity. I often give, as an example, trigger point therapy, which remains largely uncommercialized and generic despite massive popularity. On the other hand, CFT seems very well positioned to slide down that slippery slope, given several clues: the polish of the RestoreBackPain.com website, the huge emphasis on clinician training on that site. There's a 3,600 word page about becoming confidently competent in CFT delivery. The consistent use of capital letters, it's always capital CFT, never small CFT. The fact that you can already buy CFT seminars is also another strong clue. Although they're not particularly widespread, there are some that are already available. The branding and standardization of therapy methods is nearly impossible to do without selling out, thanks to both perverse incentives and overwhelming social pressures in the wrong direction. Most professionals and patients easily succumb to the allure of branded methods and the assumption that there must be something to them, and they're largely oblivious to their corrupting power and long-term consequences. Even the best of them seem doomed to turn into dumbed-down dogma and to produce at least one or two generations of therapists still clinging to it because of their literal investment, long after science has pointed out that their emperor has no clothes. I am slowly turning into a bit of a has-been in this industry, an old man who just cannot even with the new social media, video-centric and rotten with memes, and I cannot even use modern slang without scare quotes so that all the erudite olds in my audience can see that I know it's not proper English. Despite this, I've been influential enough over the years, once upon a time, to see some of my ideas popularized and oversimplified and then deployed with dogmatic zeal. It's bizarre and disheartening to realize that you can pump high-grade nuance into your work for years only to watch people reduce complex and uncertain hypotheses to overconfident soundbites. So, I get it. A method of therapy can truly be a good idea, founded and promoted by people who are wise and flexible and curious, and still become a simplistic parody of itself when it goes mainstream. We've finally arrived at my last section, my conclusion, which is brilliantly, creatively titled Summing It All Up. My wife calls me Summary Boy, like it's a superpower for the sidekick of some C-list superhero. And so in conclusion, shouldn't be something I say in conversation at home. So this is your Summary Boy summary, because I love to summarize. Restore was an impressive attempt to standardize and test the real-world effectiveness of an advanced cocktail of education, encouragement, movement, and lifestyle changes. A lot of ingredients that have been popular with progressive healthcare professionals for many years, and me too. In many ways, it was a test of those beliefs and values about rehab and pain management in general, and that is why I've spent so much time on it. But it just didn't do the job nearly as well as the headlines and buzz suggested. The results weren't all that impressive, even for disability, and certainly not for pain itself. And what benefit it did detect might be attributable to artifacts and confounders, such as the particularly glaring examples of the sensors and a Frostrebo effect. A replication attempt might well fail. Restore's results are certainly not bad news, and they are consistent with CFT being good medicine, but results twice as good as this still wouldn't have proved it, not with that study design. It was a meaningful step on the long road to CFT becoming an evidence-based therapy, a journey I want to see completed, but I fear that it will not be completed because BPSified care is just too tricky to standardize. I think it's a lot like trying to teach people to be good teachers, almost literally. And there's another more troubling reason that I fear that CFT will be perpetually stuck at promising, because I'm not convinced that the fear of movement explains back pain in the first place. I fear that CFT, for all its less wrong virtues, despite being so much better than what it's replacing, could still be barking up the wrong tree. It's been really hard to nitpick something that I want to like so much. This process has forced me to do something I probably should have done long ago, which is seriously reconsider some of these principles, like, does fear of movement explain back pain? Is that the issue? Is that what we're actually fighting? Well, I've done it now. It's really, I've been pushed into that awkward place and had a lot of serious thinks about it. If you're still listening, if you're here at the end of this, thank you for joining me. Thank you for sticking with it. Thank you for being nerdy with me, and I'll talk to you next time.